the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there, growing your business, starting a business, just doing something in the entrepreneurial world. It is the happiest place to be. This is where you find people making the change that you want to be a part of and growing the future of our country and the world that excites you. I am so excited for the book that I just finished writing, The Real Environmentalist. I hope you buy a copy, because I got to meet five heroes that are solving the world's problems right now. In the book, we talk about a guy named Gator Halpern. He's been on this show, and he grows coral faster than God does. And so we can now, can go into a resort or a reef and help repopulate and grow new areas. It's just so amazing what the entrepreneurs are doing out there. And we got two of those today. First up, we have Jeremy Cotter. He's been on the show before and quickly becoming a good friend of the show. He is doing some amazing things in the medical space. He has a newsletter that you want to sign up for, I am sure. If you've ever been hiking, you probably owe him a thank you as well. So excited for you to meet Jeremy. After that, we have Venetia Rathod. She is an amazing thought leader from down under, Australia, and is doing some great things there. We have a wonderful conversation about introversion versus extrovert and how passion plays into all of it, selling. Great stuff. And so I'm excited for you to meet her, and we get to play the quick 10. So she plays the quick 10 with us. We haven't played the game in a while. And so it is always fun when that happens. I haven't mentioned the thesis recently. I should do that. We do believe that anyone should be an entrepreneur, can be an entrepreneur. When you forget about creativity, go copy someone else's idea. You do not need an original idea. You just need to copy someone else. Spend under $5,000 to test your idea. Any business model can be tested for that. If you can't test it for that, you probably shouldn't be doing it. And we love passion in the church, synagogue, the mosque, and at home, in the bedroom. But for other than that, you just have to like your business that you start more than working for the man. That's our take on passion. We'll be back in just a second with a great show. You're going to love Jeremy.
On climate change? Introducing The Real Environmentalists, the bold new book by Jim Beach. It's not about activists, politicians, or professors. It's about the entrepreneurs, real risk takers, building cleaner, smarter solutions, not for applause, but for profit. The entrepreneurs in the book aren't giving speeches. They're in labs, factories, and offices, cleaning the past and building clean products for the future. The Real Environmentalists is available now, because the people saving the planet aren't the ones you think. Go to Amazon and search for Real Environmentalist. Thank you.
We are back. And again, thank you so much for being with us. I'm very excited to welcome back to the show Jeremy Cotter. He has been with us, I guess this is his second time, and very appreciative. Also, he has been really giving to us personally here. He just read the whole book for The Real Environmentalist and wrote a nice quote for us, one of the blurbs that we put out on the cover and all that. And so Jeremy has been very generous. Amazing career. Listen to this. He worked at some company called Google and Meta. Amazing that you could find a guy with a career at both of those. And he was at Facebook prior to the IPO, which is even more impressive. He started a company called All Trails, which we will learn about, which is the largest guide for all of the trails and hiking out there. Jeremy, welcome back, and thank you for all your support recently.
Yes, thank you, Jim. And I'm excited with my current company, U-Rise, to discuss that as well.
All right. That's right. The health company.
That's right.
Okay. You're doing so many things. Let's start with right. the trails, all trails. That's sort of a tangential thing. How did that come about?
Yes. So I just left Facebook and was asked by a former classmate of mine to join him in starting an entirely new company that later became the largest community for outdoor recreation in the world and was recently ranked number one in the App Store by Apple. An amazing journey to take, and you can be sure that a lot of people questioned my decision after I was leaving such a successful company, Facebook, to co-found this early stage startup. It turns out that it was one of the best decisions of my life, because my mission from the beginning was to help people get access to the outdoors. And you might be surprised that a lot of people doubted us. They thought that the market of the outdoors was too small to build a highly successful, high value company. Well, it turns out they were wrong at the end. And along the way, there were a lot of challenges. But what I think is valuable there is you can go after almost any mission that matters to you. And if you become number one in it, if you become a leader within that category, you can build an incredibly valuable company. And that's what we did.
So it seems like to me, there'd be a lot of tie-ins with commercial products, hotels near places you're sending people.
Yeah, so it turns out that there's an entire ecosystem available to people in the outdoor space. And just like you said, you know, if someone goes outdoors, they're part of this larger ecosystem of businesses that surround them. But really, the way that we actually built a highly profitable company, which was eventually sold for almost $100 million, and now has a value of, I would say, hundreds and hundreds of million in terms of the company that acquired it has taken it, you know, even further. The way that we built value is we initially had an advertising-based revenue stream. We then took it and turned it into a subscription-based revenue stream in partnership with National Geographic. And so National Geographic was selling custom topographic maps through our platform, and we charged an annual subscription fee to do that. Now, today, we've turned that into something that's even more valuable and that offers all kinds of advantages for a premium subscription.
I'm on it now, and yeah, this is very cool. How can someone say the outdoors isn't big enough? That to me is one of the dumbest things I've heard in a long time.
Well, the reason is because if you compare it to a market like, let's say, you know, telephones, or you compare it to a market like coffee or something like that, right? There are certain products and technologies and services that are applicable to, say, 90% of the population or almost 100% of the population. And the outdoors is still, you know, unfortunately, it's still a fraction of the total population is, you know, an outdoor enthusiast. So that's the reason why they said that. Now, it turns out that, you know, most people that are into the outdoors are highly educated. They have a stable or successful job. And it turns out that that's a great market because, you know, it's customers that have disposable income and that are able to actually spend it on something that they enjoy.
Well, the most important thing is it got all of the good hikes near me are included in the local hikes that you suggest. So you'll get all the good ones.
Yeah, absolutely. That's at the end of the day, that's where it really dovetails with your mission, Jim, you know, in helping people understand what they can do to combat the climate crisis that we're in and essentially be more mindful of the environment. It turns out that entrepreneurs can can sort of address that in a number of different ways. We addressed it by giving people access to the outdoors so they would appreciate and protect the outdoors. You know, there's 100 other ways to do it. And so this is an example of operating in a market that people didn't believe in, people doubted us for, with a clear mission, and then turning it into a success where, you know, we were ranked by Apple. Apple awarded us above ChatGPT. They awarded us above Nike, above all those different apps in the App Store to celebrate the achievement that we'd made in growing our user base and in making a, you know, a real company out of this.
All right, let's talk about health and URise. Tell us about what that business is all about.
Absolutely. So URise initially was simple. It was an investment firm focused on investing in the most promising early stage AI health companies before the IPO. And since then, we became involved in a number of just incredible companies and took it a step further and built a media component to what we're doing, where I went around the country and I talked to some of the world's best scientists at places like MIT, Harvard, Duke, and doctors as well, and decided that I wanted to distill that wisdom and those insights into a weekly newsletter that I've now made available at urise.me for no cost. And I mean, that's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of the value that it gives to the audience and to the reader. And we're making it, again, available at no cost. So, you know, it's something that I'm really proud of, especially because the mission for me and sort of what I was doing with URise from the beginning was very much a personal mission that started out with, you know, it was 9:30 at night. I was working in the office at Google. I get a call that my mother has just been diagnosed with a terminal illness. Just devastating news for myself and my family. And then I realized that there was an opportunity to take the personal side of my life and combine it with the professional side and help others. And that's exactly what I did. And that's what fueled the success of URise. And here we are today.
So how many companies, you say that you invest in AI health companies. Is that right?
That's right.
And then the newsletter, it covers the latest medical news, or what does the newsletter actually talk about?
Yeah, it covers how to optimize your personal health, Jim. And so the people that are listening today, you know, if they want to learn about what are the best supplements to take, you know, what are the best ways to prevent, you know, heart disease or reduction of cancer, and then ultimately live longer, but at the same time live better, right? We're not just trying to extend life. You know, this idea of longevity, if you're living longer but you're not healthy, then there's no point. So what we're doing is helping people live the fullest life that they can by understanding science-backed strategies to improve their health. And that's what we distill and provide in a weekly newsletter. And it's, you know, so far just been amazed by how positive the reception for that has been. So,
all right. And what type of companies are you looking to invest in or have already invested in the AI health? Are there any examples you can share with us or what looks cool? I've been reading a lot about AI reading x-rays and stuff like that. What's URise going to invest in?
Yeah, no. Well, I think one of the most exciting companies and spaces that we invested in recently was focused on the immune cells in your brain. And Jim, the same way that you have an immune system in your body, you have one in your brain, and it clears out debris, it clears out toxins, all kinds of things. And what happens is when it becomes overactive, just like in the body, it actually destroys the healthy neurons in your brain. So we invested in a company called Modulo Bio. And Modulo Bio is a California-based company that has done incredibly well. They've recently partnered with Eli Lilly. They've raised millions. And they're able to modulate the state of the neuroimmune cells in your brain to solve everything from Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, depression, you know, with an initial focus on ALS and FTD, but it goes way beyond that. So that's a company that is just an amazing team and company that I think is a fascinating space within the AI health realm. Now, it goes beyond that. And as you know, you just said it a moment ago, Jim. You said, you know, AI reading images, say, you know, radiological images, MRI images, better and faster than the typical radiologist today. What does that mean? What does it mean for AI and health to be combined? Well, it's very powerful because we know that doctors are human beings. They have a certain amount of time per day. They have a certain amount of energy per day. And AI removes all those limits, right? AI only gets better as it ages. Now, does that mean doctors are going to get replaced? Absolutely not. Doctors are going to be complemented and helped by AI. And one of the problems that we have is that in the next 10 years, Jim, there's going to be a shortage of over 100,000 doctors in the U.S., just in the U.S. And AI allows people to, it allows doctors to help more patients, and it allows patients to help themselves. So ultimately, you get a really complementary relationship between the doctor and AI when used correctly. And that's beautiful.
It is, and you're right about the doctor shortage. That's a huge problem here in Georgia, especially in South Georgia. We're having to pay doctors, you know, medical expense, their medical school bills off to have them come live in Georgia for 2 or 3 years. Where do you live, Jeremy?
I split time between the East and West Coast, between New York and California. As I've mentioned, I work with leading scientists, and also in Miami, Florida. So you know, between Miami, Florida, New York, and California, I'm able to get access to the best doctors and scientists across the country.
All right. Well, I will see you in the airport then. What about the deal, you know, of responsibility when we're talking about someone's life and or the self-driving cars? Who's going to be responsible when AI makes the mistake? So if your doctor uses AI and together the two of them miss the cancer that I have, do I sue the guy who wrote the AI?
So that's a great question. It's going to be applicable to all kinds of things, even beyond health. When AI goes wrong,
travel company or the taxi company, when it wrecks, who do I sue? You know, the guy that wrote the AI for that taxi.
Yeah. The quick answer is, unfortunately, it's going to be very hard to sue the AI because the user agreement that you have when you enter into being a consumer of any kind of AI product, including ChatGPT and some of the other more popular products, is that you're signing away most of your rights in the terms and conditions. Now, does that mean that there aren't edge cases where, you know, potentially AI is responsible for something that, you know, legally would be of note? Potentially. But most of the time, that's just the agreement that you're making when you're using that product or service, the AI product or service. So it does leave a question, like you said, who is actually legally responsible for you know, the problem or the error in AI? And I think let's leave that question to the attorneys that are currently wrestling with this issue right now, Jim, if that's okay.
I think my assistant Frank told you that I had a funny story to tell you about you.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. No, I'm all ears.
It was an AI story. So I was working on the book and I was doing the blurbs. You know, you were kind enough to write us a blurb, as I mentioned. And so I put all of the blurbs into ChatGPT and said, how would you arrange these? What would you do? You know, what are your thoughts, basically? And ChatGPT said, well, Jeremy Cotter is such a notable public figure, you should put him first. So ChatGPT, Jeremy, knows who you are, where you live, and all about you.
Yeah, well, that's very humbling. I will say that, you know, I'm humbled by that. And I know you work with great people, Jim. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for the blurb. But isn't it interesting that ChatGPT knows who you are?
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting experiment that anyone that's listening can run on themselves, which is they can ask, you know, if anyone who has been using ChatGPT, you know, and has asked several questions to the app, can go back and say, hey, what do you know about me? And what would you recommend to me? You know, basically doing a self-reflection, asking ChatGPT to hold the mirror back to that person, you'll get some interesting conclusions.
I did an experiment exactly like that. I'm working on a fiction of a fictional account of the first business I built back in the 90s. You know, that business grew to 89 locations and 650 employees. And it was quite a story. And so I've written that entire story up, and there's two characters. That there's me and my business partner, who was one of the best men in my wedding, and I was in his wedding and stuff. And we've been longtime friends. And I asked ChatGPT, what do you think about the book and the characters? And we had a very long conversation about the book. It was quite fascinating. The weird thing is that I asked it, which character do you think I am? And ChatGPT picked my friend, not me, as who I was in real life. And I was just blown away by that. It's challenging everything I think I know about myself. And
that's interesting. Yeah, that's a really interesting observation, because a lot of times the way that we're perceived is different than what we think we are.
Yes, very true. And I thought I had written the book so that he was sort of the hero. Oh gosh, it's really challenging me as to who the hell I am now. ChatGPT, I'm really confused about myself.
Existential crisis.
Yes. It's the one that's supposed to having existential crisis, not me. What do you think about the future of AI, the guardrail situation, all of that? Do we end up with Terminator, or does it come out in the end 50 years from now, everyone's happy and smells better?
Jim, I think the future is bright, and we've got the naysayers that are saying, you know, AI is going to basically take us over as humans, is going to destroy everything. And yeah, there's always a risk that AI gets more out of control than we would like. But look at every technology that we've had in human history, you know, starting with, you know, swords and shields hundreds of years ago to today, what we have with all our modern software. There's always been two sides to the blade, meaning there's always been a positive side and a negative side. The same sword that defends you can also kill another person too, right? So AI is the same thing. It's got two sides to it. What our job is as humans is to maximize those positive sides and look for how to mitigate the risks of the negative. I think that AI, when applied to certain categories like health, is one of the most exciting avenues for the future. We think about the ability to analyze massive sets of data and for the first time make sense of them in nanoseconds. I mean, I like to compare this to the X-ray. And when the X-ray was discovered in 1885, for the first time, humans could look inside human bodies. And now with AI, for the first time, we can look inside massive data sets in a way that we were never able to before. But then when you look at its effect on health, on human health, which arguably, I mean, we know it, you know it, Jim, that without health, we have nothing, right? And so you look at the shortage of doctors, you look at the need for personalized medicine, the fact that you have a unique set of genes, unique set of experience, and we need medicine and science to adapt to you personally. Well, AI is making that possible. You know, with a wearable now, I can find out 2 years ahead of time if I'm going to get a heart attack. With a wearable, I'm able to in real time measure the glucose spikes that are happening in my body. You know, when I, have a piece of food or drink, or it's interesting. I was drinking a glass of oat milk. You know, what was it? about a week ago, and I was using a wearable to track my glucose, and I've never had any issues with my glucose. I'm perfectly healthy, but my glucose just spiked out of control, and I realized that oat milk had a deleterious effect on glucose in a way that other types of almond milk, et cetera, don't have. Well, that's something that's real data in real time happening right now. That was never before possible, because 3 years ago, there had been a huge debate about, oh no, this milk is better than this one and blah, blah, blah. And it turns out that actually there's a real way to measure the data inside your body right now. And if you guys, and if you, or any of the listeners want to learn more about that, I have a whole sort of set of information about that on urise.me where I explain all of that.
Are you becoming an expert on health as well through this? Are you being a doctor, not de facto, but in actuality?
So I'm not trying to be a doctor. What I am trying to do is to combine my technology background with the world of health in a way that fills a gap that the traditional doctor hasn't, which is what's called preventative medicine. Being able to help you years before you get that heart attack, being able to help you understand what's happening in your body without ever needing to get an X-ray or an MRI. Those are the kinds of things that the traditional world of medicine left out because they were concerned with what's called end of care. The moment that you actually have a heart issue, you need to go to the hospital. That's what they were concerned about, right? So it's this new world of medicine and of personalized care, preventative care that I'm most interested in. And that's where I can really move the needle with my technology background and do something that really helps people.
Excellent. Jeremy, thank you for all you're doing for your investors and for the businesses out there and for everyone who wants to go walk on the trails and do a good hike. And thank you for the Urise newsletter. How do people find out more, get on the newsletter, all that?
Really simple, Jim. They just go to urise.me. That's Y-O-U-R-I-S-E, just the way it sounds, the correct spelling. And then it's .me.me. And that's it. Like I said, at no cost, they can get access to the amazing advisors that we have on our team of Harvard, Duke, MIT scientists where we distill their wisdom and their insights for the listeners.
What was that place you mentioned? Harvard, I got. And then you mentioned something that was like
Duke.
Duke. What is that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Harvard, MIT, Duke. Yeah.
What is Duke? Never heard.
Duke University is my alma mater. It's where I went to school.
You mean Duke? Oh, okay. Yeah. Duke.
Duke. It's not. You're an ACC guy, right?
I'm a Georgia Tech guy. Jeremy, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back. And thank you for your support with our book and everything. Take care. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again, Jim. You too. Bye bye.
And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
That is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to welcome a new guest, someone that's going to help us with our authentic personal brand. Please welcome Venetia Rathod to the show.
Thank you
right?
so much.
Yeah, Rathod.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah, Rathod.
How are you doing?
I'm great. It's the morning here in Australia, so it's going really well. It's actually sunshine.
Oh, you're lucky. And also author of The Briefcase Effect. I didn't get that out in the introduction. Venetia, welcome. I'm excited to talk about brand, and congratulations on the book. Let's start there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the one-liner for the book is, if you think about the Dale Carnegie's How to Make Friends and Influence People, and EQ Guy Had a Baby, that's kind of this book. So the one-liner that I have for The Briefcase Effect is, how do you become a magnet for amazing people and opportunities and detract those who harm and hinder you?
All right.
So, yeah. And it's based on my one-to-one personal branding leadership sessions that I would do for people. And my friend said to me, I saw the impact of your work. Can you please write a book about it? Because I think it would help a lot of people. And so I ignorantly wrote it. I didn't think it was that hard to write a book. So I wrote it within 4 or 5 months. It's very hard to write a book. For anyone listening, it's not easy, but I wrote it with the intent to help. So it's filled with lots of activities to really embody and be really clear on what you stand for, what you're good at, what makes you money, and also how you want to live in this world.
All right. And was there a connection with the actual briefcase? I don't know if I caught that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. The main thing, the briefcase. So I actually carry a physical briefcase for nearly the last 3 years. And the briefcase is in loving memory of my father, who passed away 15 years ago. And he used to take one to work. And so when I started working in the startup tech world, it reminded me so much of sci-fi, which is what we grew up with. So from Voyager to Stargate, Star Wars, you name it, we've been across it. And so when I started working in tech, I bought a briefcase in memory. People started loving it. And the briefcase effect was the start of me coming out of my shell.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you came out of your shell. Tell us about that. How did that happen? Would you consider yourself 100% an introvert?
No, I'm definitely extrovert, but I definitely network like an introvert. So how I came out of my shell is I changed my life personally and professionally. So I was in something quite toxic and then started in a new industry. People really liked what I had to say. So what the issue I found with a lot of people is they made their career decisions only on passion. And passion is great, but not everyone's able to do that. So the question I kept asking people was, what's the mastery you want to pursue? So what are you really good at? What's your mastery? And how does that drive what you care about? And then people wanted me to talk at things. I was really welcomed in this new industry of startups and tech, and I never had that before. So slowly I started building my online profile as well as my profile of speaking and networking, and I never did that before. And so I think anyone can do that, especially in startups. You need to have a strong network, especially if you're going to raise money and garner like high top talent. So that's how it kind of started for me. And I knew I could do this for other people and get them really clear, because my 3-hour sessions would end up in a 20-page document. And the book is an extension of that.
All right. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, the briefcase, does everyone now in Melbourne, are you in Sydney or Melbourne? Melbourne, aren't you?
In Sydney.
Sydney.
In
okay. Sydney. Does everyone in Sydney now know that you always have the briefcase?
They do. Yeah, I've got quite a reputation because of it.
I mean, that's a good thing, though. That makes you easy for people to talk to about each other, about you. They all know that common thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so the briefcase is the reason why I called it the book that way is that it's about finding your own briefcase, but the briefcase has such an impact that every tech conference I go to across the country, people know that it's my briefcase. It's filled with stickers from startups and scale-ups. So yeah, it became a very unknown, loved thing.
I love that. That is, that's hysterical. And you said you would have these 3-hour sessions with people that turned into tens and tens of pages of notes. What were you talking about then? Why?
Yeah. So what I really got crystal clear, I think the biggest problem I'm seeing now is that we are so overwhelmed with how we can spend our time and build our career. I think back in the day, we had really set jobs, but now we can be so many things. And so everyone is so overwhelmed with conflicting advice and their skill set and what to do with that. And so when I worked for a tech recruitment company, I did everything apart from recruitment. I just kept seeing this trouble again and again. I've been through so many crises myself about what to do with my time and life and all that stuff. And I started creating that clarity for others because I was so clear in mine. And so the way that I would pitch myself, then people were like, well, how are you so clear? So I started doing that for other people. And then what I saw is that the confidence level of people tripled. And that's why I wrote the book, because my friend said, this confidence of this person has just gone up so much. And I think you could have a lot of impact in what you do. So it's quite holistic, but it's very career focused on you. So it's just uncovering things you already know about yourself, but being really clear. And then that shows you up with confidence, that gets you to harness top talent, that gets you to get raising and capital. And that's what people really aspire to be around.
Yes. And you said that this whole system attracts people you want and repels people you don't want.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a good fragrance. That would be a great fragrance as well.
It would be. Yeah, the briefcase effect could definitely be a fragrance. That is very true. I think it happens naturally when you back yourself more and you're not driven exactly by what other people think by their title. So in networking and building relationships, I often say you have to go with what you value and what's important to you. So I tend to fall and kind of check for people on their moral compass, and then I find out what they do. So first I have to build trust. And even if they're a very senior title, even if they're not that, like more junior, to me it doesn't matter. I just want to see what their moral compass is like. And quite often I get to connect with very deep people because they know that I don't look at them as a dollar sign or as a piece of status. I look at them as them. And that resonates. And that goes back to how to make friends and influence people. That was one of his core philosophies, right?
That's right. I was going to ask you about that. You mentioned Dale Carnegie. Your book is a mix of Dale Carnegie and who? Iggy?
An ikigai. You know, the Japanese concept of how you spend your time, what makes you money, and what's important to you and your skill set, that's that concept. So a Japanese concept.
We didn't know where I'm you sorry. Were. Here, I'm going to go into Japanese for a minute. I missed it.
So. My bad. Ikigai, yes, that concept of all the things of what you're good at and what you care about. But don't make all your decisions on business and your career only on what you're passionate about. Because I think it can be very fleeting, and I see a lot of people ditch work because they don't like it anymore. And that's just the reality of life, is you're not always going to love what you do, and that's fine.
Yes. All right, you also said that writing a book was easy and then hard.
Yeah, writing a book is really hard. Anyone is thinking about it, I mean, I was really ignorant. I wrote the book because I wanted to help, but I didn't realize how hard it was. So especially you have to know the reason of why you're writing the book, because some people write a book so, you know, their bullies know that they've done something, or they want to impress their mom, or, you know, they want to be the top seller. Or for me, I wanted to write the book because I knew it could help. So I had quite a few case studies from the personal branding sessions I did. And I thought, you know what, this could be a very practical tool to do what I care about and to get people to just do the thing. Because the more people that back themselves, the more people that will start businesses, the more changes I will see in the world that I want to see.
Yes. All right. So what advice would you give to someone else writing a book now that you finally got it done?
I did. I would be really clear on why you're writing the book. And so you can always have that as your anchor point when you're getting very stressed. And when your editor tells you that sucks and you are like very attached to it, you have to remember it's always about the end outcome. So for me, I always wrote it for the person that was on the other end who was lost and confused and overwhelmed as I had been so many years. And the other thing that I did, because I wrote it in such a short period, I built in public. So the naming of the Briefcase Effect, originally I wanted to call it F Personal Branding, but my book is all about personal branding, so they said you can't do that. So I would do a lot of surveys in LinkedIn and my socials and ask a lot of people, so market research, like the same way of launching a tech product. So I built in public with that, and I also got people really engaged with the book cover design, because I carry a physical briefcase. They said, put your briefcase on there. And I said, no, it's about you finding your briefcase, not about my briefcase. But I have pictures inside of the book of my briefcase. But the building in public was really fun because I made friends. I had heard from people I hadn't heard from in years. And so people really liked being part of the journey. So very similar to building a tech product, is that bring people on the journey with you as you write.
That's very good advice. Did you actually write, you know, like type it into the computer or physically write it out? Or how did you put the words into computer memory?
Yeah, I would physically type. I had a lot of planning I did because it was went down a self-published route, but I worked with a company on it. So I would write in like big paper things, like what the concept is, how I want the chapters, like huge pieces of paper everywhere for that part, and then break down the chapters and then physically start writing. I would write typing.
All right. And the book, go through some of the content with us. You know, chapter one is about unpacking, and then two is design, three, carry, four, amplify. Teach us this method that you're alluding to in the chapter titles.
Yeah, for sure. So the first pack is unpacking your briefcase. So that's all about understanding your drivers, your motivations. So it's got a lot of questions about discovering you and the useful parts of you that will get you the information you need and the clarity you need on where you want to go. So for example, I thought, you know, what do you want your eulogy to say would have a lot of data and insights. It actually doesn't. Most people want the same thing when after they die. They want people to say that they were caring and that they were considerate and that they achieved a lot of stuff. But a really telling data point is, what is your biggest insult and what is your biggest compliment? And from that, you can learn a lot about yourself. So the book really is about learning about what your drivers are, who your mentors are, understanding what all the hidden drivers and things that you care about are. So then I think with the company, when I do my work with people, culture and strategy, I always look at the what is happening now. So it's the same kind of self-audit is unpack, which is the first chapter and probably the biggest chapter and the biggest chunk that I spend my time when I do my sessions is really unraveling and learning about how you operate. And then from that data, then you can kind of design, which is chapter two, what you care about, what you're really good at, and what drives you and what you care about. So from there, you really get to understand your world. You get to understand your value set. So they're all the hidden things that kind of drive you. So for example, for values for me, depth is really important. So when I'm starting to network, I will walk into a room, and I'm an extrovert that networks like an introvert. So I'll probably talk to two or three people in a room, if that, and I don't work the room. It's not my style. I need to get to know you. And when you identify how you like to build relationships and what's important for you, I mean, that will help with how you build your network and your community and grow your business. And so there are things like that that would be in chapter two. And then for chapter three, I actually have a friendship audit in there. So carry is all about what's the world that you're carrying your briefcase in? How are you coping mentally with things? So I have a framework that talks about your growth mindset in terms of characters. So instead of saying, have a growth mindset, I'm like, that's really nice, but how do you practically do that apart from going from a hard time? So I have a framework in there that kind of helps you think about your mindset as characters. And like, so for example, in my brain, I have the jester, which keeps me down to earth and makes me laugh at myself and not take it too seriously. I also have gratitude. I have compassion. I have curiosity. You know, I have acceptance. And so I've created characters in my mind to help with my growth mindset. And then I watch what other people have, and people who react quite aggressively or, you know, have a strong temper or not able to handle stress a lot. I wonder what's inside their minds, like who are the main occupants in their brain. So kind of a framework to kind of help you figure out yours, and then figure out, once you figure out what's in there, what do you want to keep and not keep? So I do stuff like that. Friendship audit is really good. Just be really clear on who's in your circle, because that has a massive impact in how you succeed and not succeed. And then chapter 4 is my smallest chapter. And amplify means, how do you bring your presence online? A lot of us over 30 really struggle because we didn't really grow up with online with our careers, but it can actually propel you on a global stage. And we've never had that before. So now the everyday person has access to a global audience. And the thing I really want everyone to really realize when it comes to social media is that we always shared stories over a fire, over a group, and that happens across civilizations from ancient history. Social media is simply an evolution of storytelling. It's still the same feeling. Now we have a whole global audience that we can share our stories with, and we never had that before.
The only problem with that analogy is that they didn't have a bunch of people by the campfire talking about other things, making up random lies, and trying to have the storyteller shot, you know, because he's too,
oh my God,
whatever,
yes.
You know?
Oh my God.
You know.
Jim, can I share something with that?
Yes.
Like, I get a lot of people that tell me that. So one of my absolute inspirations in life is the confidently incompetent.
Yes.
And
I love those people.
Yes.
There's a whole generation of those people. We
yeah,
have a name
so
for those people.
I feel them. So that's what I tell people when they feel hesitant to post. I'm like, there's so much garbage and misinformation. Can you please put the right content out there? And quite often there's a lot of people who will watch and not engage with your content, but people are watching. Always people are watching more than commenting. And you just never know what that might bring for you. And so think of your online presence as your 24/7 resume. So someone can always kind of access and understand you by your online presence. And instead of filling the internet with confidently incompetent, let's fill it up with, you know, actual knowledge that's important and useful.
Yes, yes. And sometimes the more ignorant they are, the more confident they become.
Yes. A players, I find, will often doubt themselves because they are very aware of what they don't know. And they're so busy building their business, they're not busy showing it off. And A players are also people who are operators. Anyone that is driven to build, to collaborate, to share, really open to their flaws and open to working with people, I mean, they are the ones that tend to suffer, and that's also why this book is there. So build with commercial integrity, show what you need to show, and it does pay off to have that strong compass. But as the book, How to Make Friends and Influence People, it's a long-term game. So this is kind of a book to show, like, there's someone like me, I literally run around the briefcase. You're going to ask those questions later, but like, I'm one of the princesses at this private club and I'm just myself, and I'm able to kind of do that. And I'm able to do that. I don't have to change myself for it. Like, the right people will recognize if you lead with your strengths. So I tell people, lead with your strengths and tenacity. Don't lead with victimness, because people don't like that. And so if you develop your skill set very strongly and you're very clear on what you're good at, you will become hard to ignore, even in spaces that you may not be traditionally welcomed in. And that's what this book is all about.
I love it. How do we find out more, get in touch, follow online, get a copy of the book?
Yay. So I'm on Amazon, The Briefcase Effect. My website is thebriefcaseeffect.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a briefcase and a fairy as on my logo. So I'm sticking with the brand name there. And yeah, if you have any questions, just reach out, Venetia@p3studio.com.au.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. And congratulations. I hope the book continues to sell well.
Thank you so much for your time, Jim. I really, really appreciate it. And everyone listening.
And we will be right back. We are back and have another brave contestant willing to play the Quick 10. Please welcome Venetia Rahoth to the show, author of The Briefcase. What's the next word? Effect.
Effect. Yeah.
Venetia, welcome to the Quick 10. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm well. Do you want to accept the standard wager? The standard wager.
Ooh, okay. The standard wager.
There you go. You accept. Number one, your favorite creativity hack.
You know what? I buy flowers every week for myself to remind myself of life's beauty and life's impermanence. So it just gives me a bit of a reminder that even if things don't work out now, creatively, it means that something else could work out later. And don't make a big deal about yourself.
Favorite bootstrapping trick.
Okay, so for your workforce, figure out what you actually need. So the buy, build, borrow model, and create such a great brand in market that you win the heart of top talent.
Number three, name your top passions.
Reducing wealth inequality gap. Reducing male suicide to mental health for men, reducing domestic violence into mainstream education, and speaking and training and being a princess at the private club.
Number four, the first three steps in starting a business are?
Yep. So figure out a problem that keeps coming up that you care enough about solving. So for me, it's the male suicide crisis and the lack of community for men. Number two, test the solution. So talk to potential customers and get feedback from your ICP and then build something like be scrappy and test. So do the mum test. So don't tie your ego to what the solution might be to a problem.
Number five, the best way to get your first real customer is?
My joking say was guilt them into supporting you, but actually co-create as you build. I find that's really wonderful.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
I have two. I would love a house cleaner that does washing floors, bathroom, put away my clothes, or a life admin auditor.
Number seven, best entrepreneurial advice?
A lot of people say that most people don't know what they're doing, so do it anyway.
Number eight, worst entrepreneurial mistake?
Insecurities. Being really, really insecure, not able to take feedback as you're too closely linked to the problem or the people.
Number nine, favorite entrepreneur and why?
I really like, I'm an Australian here, so Mel Perkins from Canva, what she was able to achieve in a short period of time and the charity work they can do from it.
Number 10, favorite superhero?
My great-grandmother and my mom.
All right. While we calculate the score, how do we find out with you about you? Get in touch, get a copy of The Briefcase Effect.
Yeah, I'm on Amazon. My website is thebriefcaseeffect.com, and I can be found on LinkedIn, Instagram, all the things from the website.
Fantastic. I'm waiting until we get your score. Just kind of pausing. Oh. You got a 94.
Oh, no.
It's an excellent score, but we had a judge from Melbourne, and they dinged you. And I don't know what that's about, but one of the Melbourne judges gave you some points off. So you lose the wager and you owe us a Tesla. A Tesla.
Oh.
I'll expect that around here soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim.
We are out of time for today, but you know what we do. That's right. We come back tomorrow. Be safe. Take care and go make $1 million. Bye now.